Welcome to the Creative Careers in Medicine podcast with your hosts, Dr. Amandeep Hansra, Dr. Dana Pung, and myself, Dr. Elise Putt. Join us as we talk to inspiring clinicians who have redefined their careers. Today I'm joined by Dr. Isabel Marshall, who at just 18 years of age co-founded an organization called Taboo to help women around the world by breaking down stigma around menstruation and providing greater access to hygiene products. Dr. Marshall has just started working as a junior doctor, having run Taboo alongside medical school for many years. In 2021, she was awarded Young Australian of the Year for her work around Taboo and has gone on to co-found another organization by the name of Acro Health, supporting women peri and postmenopausal. We talk about how she's balanced it all and the lessons she's learned over the years, and a bit about how the medical world compares to her other ventures. I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi, Dr. Isabel Marshall. Welcome to the Creative Careers in Medicine podcast.
Hi, Elise. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Now, to kick us off, can you tell us a little bit about who you are and the work that you're currently doing?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a very, very fresh doctor, so I'm still not really used to being called that. I stopped myself there for a second when you introduced me. But I am a new intern in Adelaide in South Australia. I am also the co-founder of Acro Health and of Taboo Period of Products. So I've always enjoyed spreading my brain between different areas. I'm a very curious person, so I find a lot of things interesting and like to sink my teeth into them. So love a project, love a challenge, and really keen to learn more through my journey as a doctor now as well. Here to learn a lot is really what I'm all about.
Yeah, amazing. And I know that you've got a lot of amazing stuff outside of your clinical work, but I want to kick off by just getting a sense of where the clinical medicine piece fits into it all. I know we were talking before we hit record and you've just started and you're on a night's term, but how are you finding internship so far?
So I'm doing 7 nights on, 7 days off. I am the surgical intern at one of the major hospitals in Adelaide. So that means I cover about 4 wards overnights. We have a team of 6 of us doctors, all at sort of different levels. And yeah, my role is really to be the go-to for our patients on those wards that might have deranged vitals that the nurses have picked up and need a review, do bloods at various points in the night for things like vancomycin levels or putting cannulas in if they need for antibiotics. It's a very like procedural role. And when I'm not doing that, I'm really just doing review of deranged vitals usually. But it's been such a huge learning curve. I'm getting more confident as I go through, which is nice. I've only had 3 strings of nights on, so still got a lot to learn, but I have a beautiful team that has been super supportive. So something I like about nights is everyone gets a little bit weird at night time. Like the barriers come down, the walls come down, and there's always so many fun stories and the shifts go so quickly as well. So it's been a really good start.
Yeah, it sounds like you've had a very good experience, but just such a strange way to enter the system, especially doing that really intense block where you're working all the time and then off for a week as well. But it sounds like possibly a good thing when you're juggling other roles as well. Have you kept other stuff going over the last few weeks?
Exactly. So it's actually been a huge sort of blessing in disguise in terms of my role with Acro Health as well. So my co-founder is also a medical intern. She is working in Queensland, but the week on week off has been great for that. On my weeks off, I tend to be doing Acro work, and that's very flexible work as well. It's an online based business. I can work from anywhere. Got some holidays coming up or little trips coming up as well. But yeah, the beauty of Acro is that I can really do it from anywhere. So planes are good to do it from. Obviously, work from home vibes. I love working at cafes. I get a lot of energy from people around me. So now I've been pretty much just doing a bit of a tour of all the main cafes around my area, which has been nice.
And going back to your high school days, so I know that you started Taboo as a high school student. Did the idea to study medicine come before or after that, or was it all around the same time?
Yeah, no, it was actually quite a bit earlier than when we started Taboo, but it has always revolved around women's health for me. Before year 8, I sort of always wanted to do the whole, I think there was a dog shelter phase that I had. Decided I wanted to create perfumes at one stage and be a writer or something. I think I was like actually quite creatively bent for a while. None of my family are medical. So my mom's an interior designer and has a retail shop. My dad's in construction. There's never been that sort of medical chat around the table or anything. If anything, it's been the complete opposite. But I read a book. My family has been very focused on philanthropic charitable work for a long time. So that's always been on the scene around the dinner table conversations. And mum and dad have been amazing in terms of being inspiration for me when it comes to using what resources you have to help people that might not have those resources. So for dad, it's construction. So he uses his resources to help build schools or whatever it is. So that's been a real inspiration for me. I read a book called Hospital by the River by an obstetrician gynecologist called Catherine Hamlin. She's an Australian doctor. She's since passed, but she was working a lot in Ethiopia around the issue of obstetric fistulas. So complicated childbirth that results in fistulas that cause incontinence, whether that be urinary or fecal. And there's a lot of social, cultural, sexuality threads that all come into that that I found super fascinating and really upsetting. I thought it was just so unfair that women have this incredible role and have this incredible anatomy and physiology to be able to bring life into the world. And then they're somehow punished for it physically, socially, culturally. And obstetric fistulas were such a tangible way for this Australian doctor to make a big difference in the lives of these women. Because if they didn't get the procedures necessary, they'd often be isolated from their communities. They weren't able to work or anything like that. So they were rendered like isolated and unable to contribute to their community and often suffering the trauma of a really traumatic childbirth as well, often resulting in the loss of a child as well. So there's all these psychological threads through it as well. And I just thought it was very inspiring because it hit that passion point in me. And at that point, I really wanted to be an obstetrician gynecologist before I even wanted to be a doctor. Obviously, I've since wrestled with that and thought there's so many components of medicine that I might also draw passion from. So I've been really open to other things since. But it started with women's health and with Taboo. And so Taboo is a social enterprise. We sell organic pads and tampons with 100% of our net profits going towards the mission, which is to eradicate period poverty globally. So the crux of that is about period poverty. It's about making sure that women aren't disadvantaged because of their body's incredible ability to have that monthly cycle to ultimately create an environment where life can be sustained, which is incredible and definitely not something that people should be punished for. If anything, it should be celebrated and at the least accommodated for. So that evolved the passion for women's health. And I learned so much through my role with Taboo, co-founding Taboo. And then, so I've since stepped away from Taboo and my co-founder Eloise Hall has taken that on in the most incredible ways and it's still going. But yeah, for the years that I was doing that, so from 2016 to 2022, that was a huge learning journey in terms of learning about business, but also about my love for women's health and women in general.
I'm really keen to hear, how did the idea come to be and how did you, as a high school student, make that happen? I'm picturing myself in high school and I wasn't thinking that way at all. So what helped you make that happen?
I think for Taboo, it almost feels like it had to happen at that time. So Lois and I were school leaders together and we had a lot of opportunities to go to leadership conferences and workshops and things like that, which was super inspiring and really taught us a lot of tools, also resources to think about these big ideas and then try and make them happen and get the right people around us to make it happen. So we went to a leadership conference at the start of our year 12, which is 2016. And we heard from a guy called Daniel Flynn, who's the founder of a social enterprise called Thank You. You may be aware of Thank You. They started out selling water bottles in order to raise funds, so the profit being used towards water projects around the world. So that was when the social enterprise model was really introduced to us. We became fascinated and quite obsessed with the idea, started learning more about social enterprises and realized that they can really come in all sorts of shapes and forms. The crux of it is that it just has a social purpose at the center of it all. And whether that be your profits being contributed to it or your services and your resources being contributed to that mission. And for us, we decided the profit model would work with Taboo. So we're selling organic cotton pads and tampons in order to raise funds for projects aiming to eradicate period poverty. So that was the parallel. At the same time, we were learning about the issue of period poverty. I think my own period for about 2 years at that point. And so it was very like real for us. We went to a girls' school. We were all talking about it. We were all learning how complicated it was sometimes to manage. but we were in the very privileged position that we had access to pads and tampons and access to teachers that would teach us about it if we asked. At that point, it was really only if we asked, though. Like, it wasn't even deeply embedded in the curriculum. And it certainly wasn't embedded into the curriculum for boys or male counterparts. So there was certainly some gaps there that we thought needed to be filled from a more systemic cultural infrastructure perspective, even things like toilets and making sure that there's toilets that have pad bins in or tampon in them, things like that. So there's a lot of change that had to be made in the period poverty space, not only overseas, but also in Australia. But that's what, yeah, really excited us. And we thought there was a lot of room to grow and we thought that we could contribute to it. So we just got our school community around it. We got the students around it. There's so much energy and passion and encouragement from that environment, not only our school, but all the other schools that our school was connected to. And it went from there. So we did launch a crowdfunding campaign to pay for the first batch of our product. And then the idea was that it'd be a sustainable business model from there.
Yeah, wow. It's so impressive. And rightly so, you got nominated and then went on to win the 2021 Young Australian of the Year Award as well. Congratulations for that.
Thank you.
Can you tell me a bit about that process, what that year was like and what opportunities came out of that as well?
Yeah, it was totally unexpected. I'd never really heard of these awards myself. So I was anonymously nominated, which was a huge compliment, firstly. But the fact that we had the opportunity to put Taboo on our mission on a national stage was incredible. We're called Taboo because we were trying to call out the stigma associated with periods and menstruation. And so to have this opportunity to land people's homes through their TVs, through TV interviews or through radio interviews was incredible in terms of working towards our mission to eradicate period poverty, because that cultural stigma is such a huge part of it. And so that was super exciting, very energizing, very encouraging. From a personal perspective, I took the year off my study. So at this point, I was 3 years into medicine. I decided it would be best in terms of using all the opportunities from this platform to take the year off and really devote it to furthering Taboo's mission and the business. So that was a crazy year. There was a lot of keynotes and panels and interviews. So I think what I gained in terms of learning was how to communicate a story to the crowd that was in front of you, how to create that narrative so that people can come along with it, whether they bleed or whether they don't, all of that. That was a huge benefit. It was challenging year two. Obviously went through my own personal stuff and I guess grappling with things like what I wanted to do post that year, whether I wanted to continue on with medicine or whether I should ride this wave of energy. And obviously there was a lot of positive reinforcement in this space. And as a medical student, I think perhaps a lot of people listening might also feel that there's not all that much positive reinforcement as a medical student, particularly in the clinical years. And so making that transition was actually a bit of a mind boggle from getting all this positive reinforcement, people valuing my time and my opinions, and then coming into a clinical space where a lot of the time I was just apologizing for being there, apologizing for getting in the way, trying to take up as little space as possible. So that was a bit of like psychological journey for me, one that instilled, I hope, a lot of humility and perspective, but lots of lessons learned through that year.
That's so interesting. How long was your degree? Was it 5 years or?
6 years. So I then had 3 years of clinical placement to do after that.
And how do you think that has changed what you've done throughout the final few years as well? Like you said, you made a decision to step down from that and now you're doing acro as well, which I'm keen to get into. But did any of that come off the back of the Young Australian of the Year or that exposure that you had as well?
That's certainly been helpful. I think after I stepped away from Taboo, I was pretty burnt out, to be honest. I was pretty emotionally exhausted. I was a little bit confused. I felt like I'd been in this, what's that word when you get caught in a wave and you're just trying to survive underneath the wave? When you get, what's that word?
I don't know what you're going for is, but I'm just trying to picture myself as a med student. I couldn't even work a cafe job because med school was too much. So having all of that on top of med school is a lot.
When I stepped away, I ended up really focusing on just not making myself too busy for a good couple of years. I did an exchange to Denmark for 6 months, and that was just such an incredible experience, an amazing opportunity to just be an early 20s person studying and making the most of being in an incredible part of the world and going out a bit too late and not making the smartest decisions all the time. So I think I needed to lean into that a little bit. I needed to spend time with friends and just be a little bit silly. And that really rejuvenated me. I'm so glad I had the opportunity. Really appreciated that. Came back, did my final exams, which is the end of fifth year. And then by the time sixth year rolled around, I feel like I was a bit back to myself. I feel like I was a little bit more secure in what I wanted. And I also had a lot more energy. And so my friend Jazz and I, co-founder of Acro, we always tend to talk about business ideas together and general big ideas together. And we started talking about, actually completely separate to that, we started talking about our mum's experience with menopause and the complications of the depletion of estrogen, which happens through menopause, things like bone thinning and sarcopenia. My mum had a fragility fracture and she hadn't really been counseled on the effects of menopause from a bone perspective. And so she wasn't in a position to make lifestyle changes that could have perhaps prevented that. And mum's a very fit woman. She got the fracture while she was doing a marathon. Like, she's not at all like sedentary or anything like that, but she wasn't doing resistance training. I don't think she's getting enough protein in her diet. And there were other things that she could have done, quite easy things to prevent that. So we started talking about that. Jazz's mum had just been diagnosed with osteopenia as well. And so we thought, wow, there's a lot of space here for better education. And we also both love business in general. And I think business is an incredible platform for community and to spread messages if it's done with integrity and done with accountability as well. And so we wanted to build Acro from that and offer women who at midlife and menopause a really clean, simple protein powder so that they can help to reach their new increased protein targets if they need it. And that's the key thing. There, all the literature points to a food-first approach for reaching things like protein targets and micronutrient targets, things like that. And so we want to reflect that. But if women still need a bit of help, then our option is a clean, simple option and one that's not going to be trying to shove unsubstantiated claims down their throat or sort of buzzwords and advertising marketing hooks as well. So we're trying to really steer clear of that and create a mindful sale of supplements in line with the literature.
Yeah, that's amazing. I'm really keen to hear how you've changed your tact as well, in that it sounds like you took on a lot and you probably took some time and reflected now that you're doing the same thing again. And internship is hard, as much as you don't have to go home and study. I feel like I was more tired than ever in med school. So you're balancing internship and your final year of med school, you were balancing with starting this company. How have you approached it?
I'd say a little bit differently. I have been reflecting a lot on the concept of balance and realizing that it sometimes puts a lot of pressure on yourself to try and reach this perfect standard of balance. I would say the way I'm approaching it now is I have some non-negotiables and I'm a lot less of a perfectionist than I used to be. Absolutely. Like, I am very willing to let some of the balls that I'm juggling drop if I need to and give myself grace for that. There's a great analogy. Obviously, we're all juggling a lot of balls. Some of them are made of china. Some of them are made of plastic. Some of them are made of wood. And you have to be willing to choose which ones you're allowing to drop and just be okay with that. So I'm learning to be a lot more forgiving of myself when I don't do things perfectly. I am also really trying to have fun with Acro, and Jazz and I are consciously doing that all the time. This is not meant to be a huge drain of energy or resources or excitement and passion. This is meant to be something that we enjoy doing, and we constantly check in with each other. Like, are you enjoying this? Like, is still something that you like doing? And as soon as it's not, we're going to have to make changes or stop it. And we're pretty open to that. This is driven by passion, and it will need to continue to be driven by passion.
I love the fact that you've gone for the, I don't think you need this, but if you're not meeting your protein targets else, otherwise, this is a good product, that this is the science behind it. It's not pushing the product over and the sales and the business sort of stuff over all of the actual evidence base as well.
Yeah, and that's something we won't budge on, mostly because of our role as doctors as well. That's the responsibility we have, not to lure people into thinking they need something when they don't. It's also a really fine line as well. So alongside selling this lifestyle, prioritizing your protein intake, whether that be food first approach or whether that be supplemented by a clean powder, alongside that is also trying to educate people on the fact that most of these changes, that most of these long-term benefits will only come if you put in 90% of the work in your everyday decisions, in your exercise, in your diet, in the way you live life. And that's not what people want to hear, especially when they're scrolling on TikTok and coming across an ad. They want to get quick fixes. They want to hear promises that will make them feel better. They want to get the dopamine hit. So it's also trying to call that out and be an option that feels sustainable for them whilst being realistic.
Yeah. I would rather buy from that brand than the other brand, but I can see all of the challenges that you have in actually reaching the market.
And then getting the cut through. Yeah.
Do you have much of a long-term plan, either in terms of your, I know you said you're pretty open to what specialty you choose, but it does sound like women's health is always going to be a part of the picture, or in terms of acro or other ventures?
I think so. I think that women's health will always be a part of my professional life. I don't know exactly how that will look. Obviously, I've scoured the RANSCOG CV and I know what I like need to do if I want to go down that path. And I may do that, but I'm also pretty flexible right now. And I just want to get through internship and be open to everything. I want to not tell myself I'm not interested in something, because that just makes you more exhausted by the end of the day. And I like being curious about different things. I think my word for the year, I love having a word for the year, in 2022 was curious, because I was at a bit of a dead end with, not a dead end with med, but like I was feeling quite unenergized and uninspired. And I know that I respond well when I feel innately curious about something. So I was just like, you know what, I'm going to be curious about everything that comes my way with medicine. I'm going to ask all the questions. I'm going to tell my brain I'm so curious about everything. And eventually I will be. And it totally worked, because everything is interesting. Like, medicine is about humans. And I find humans very, very interesting, whether it be like the humans that are treating the person and all the dynamics involved in that, or the actual person itself and where they fit within their community and their culture and how all those social determinants have affected their health and why they've presented here at this moment. And I can get on board when I tell myself I'm very curious about that. Then I can get on board with what their electrolytes are doing and what needs to be done about their heart rhythm. Like, I get excited about that when I know that it's because I care about the human that is affected by all of that. So yeah, I'm just going to try to remain really curious. Something that I think I learned, actually this might come up, I know that you're going to ask about advice for your younger self, so maybe I'll leave it for that.
No, you can answer that now.
I think something that I've unlearned actually has been that when I went through high school and when I was part of those leadership groups, so much of it was so incredibly helpful and so much of it helped me understand myself and learn about myself more. But I also learned that there's a point at which you can start to overanalyze yourself, and doing a lot of the whole, what are your values? What is your mission? What's your personal vision statement? All of that, I think, actually contributed to a bit of burnout for me, because I started to see myself as a bit of a brand in itself. Like, we do a lot of brand strategy with Taboo and with Acro and all of that. And I'm very well across that. And it's so important to be well aligned as a team on this strategy for this brand. And that's how you ultimately create the best impact. But I think I got really burnt out by viewing myself as a brand and putting myself in a silo and being told you need to know your personal mission statement. And that needs to be very obvious with every single thing you do, because we are so nuanced as people, and I'm messy and I've got loose ends and I'm interested in a lot of things. I love reading. I like writing. I am a very family-oriented person. The gallery and my whole life doesn't revolve around women's health. It's such an important part of me, but I got really tired of that being my entire identity and people only associating me with pads and tampons. And it was a beautiful thing in itself, because it was sort of a means to an end. That's how we got the conversation started. That was my role for a long time, particularly in that year of 2021. But I needed to like detach my identity from that. And it took a few years to do that. And it took a lot of reflecting and a lot of giving myself just the permission to be a bit messier and not to silo myself and to be in a few different silos and be imperfectly in a few different silos. And I feel like that's helped me approach this new venture and this new exciting project with a different mindset, a much more sustainable mindset.
Yeah, I love that. That feels very opposite, that one track mind. It's very opposite to the curious idea.
Yeah.
It's interesting, all that values work and all that sort of stuff. Following a traditional medical pathway, you never really come across that stuff. Mm. But I think you've probably reached now some nice middle ground between the two.
Yeah, because it is very important to know your values and to make decisions for your life and your career and your future that allow those values to flourish. But they're just, it's like everything, like you can do it too much. And I think I did it too much to the point that I had analysis paralysis kind of thing. And I didn't give myself space to be more complicated and less perfect.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. I feel like I've learned so much from you. I want to hear our last thing that we ask everyone on the show is, if you could do something completely different, you don't have to think about whether or not you'd actually be successful or make money from this, but is there an alternate reality dream career that you wish you could do, or maybe you will do one day?
I would love to have the opportunity to interview heaps of different people in the world from all sorts of different perspectives and then write about it, which is probably just a journalist, right? Maybe I just want to be a journalist in an alternate world. But I do love medicine for the diverse array of people that you are exposed to. And I love the little moments where you hear the most outrageous sentences being said, like in the cubicle next to you, or just people that you might never otherwise come across. And I love medicine for that reason, but I would love if medicine gave me the opportunity to collate all of that and just celebrate how weird and wonderful people are through the written word. I think that would probably be my dream.
Yeah. Well, I think you can do that, hopefully, one day. Maybe not right now. Maybe. I feel like you have enough on right now. But thank you so much for coming on the show. That was amazing.
Thanks so much, Elise. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Creative Careers in Medicine podcast, a proud member of the Talking Health Tech podcast network. We hope that we'll see you at our upcoming conference, which is taking place Saturday, August 23rd and Sunday, August 24th in Melbourne. We will be bringing together inspiring speakers from all walks of medicine and an equally inspiring audience that we'd love to have you as a part of. Follow us on socials and subscribe to our newsletter so you don't miss any announcements. The Creative Careers in Medicine podcast acknowledges the traditional owners of country throughout Australia and recognises the continuing connection to lands, water and community. We pay our respects to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultures and elders past, present and emerging.